Okay, page 188 at the bottom, 102 on top, chapter 39. Okay, just as an introduction to what we learned last week, it's a brief introduction to be able to go further over here. It says like this. There is inanimate plant, animal, and human. Okay, so he says, inanimate and plant, that's the body of the mitzvah. Meaning, the action of the mitzvah is called inanimate. Verbal mitzvahs is called plant. Then you have animal and person. That refers to two types of intent. You can have a natural, instinctive intent to do a mitzvah. That means you do it because, yeah, this is what we're supposed to do. Or you can actually have an intellectually stimulated love to do a mitzvah because you really love Hashem and you really want to be close to Hashem. Okay, there are many things that we do out of habit. Habit has no feeling in it. We do it because this is what we do. You know, person comes to shul, they daven. Why? Because that's what you're supposed to do. You know, that's what we were taught to do from the time I was a kid. So that's what you're naturally taught to do. When you work with yourself to create an intellectual stimulated love of Hashem, then you do things much different. Like we know, when you love to do something, you do it much better than if you just do it because you do it. Okay? He says that's called the human aspect of Kavana. So there's the instinctive, natural way of doing a mitzvah. That is called animal. The intellectually stimulated love that awakens an open feeling to love and to enjoy doing the mitzvah, that is called person. Okay, now that's all. Now, Perek Lamedei says like this. Umipnei zeh, because of this reason, nikroim ha-malochim, the angels are called b'shem chayis u-behemis, beasts and animals. We have in davening, we speak about the chayis ha-kodesh, about the shor and the ox on Hashem's throne, and the lion on Hashem's throne, and the beasts of Hashem's throne. Like it says, Pnei Ariye El Ayamin, the lion, the face of the lion is on the right side of Hashem's throne. Pnei Shor Me'asmo, and the ox, the face of an ox is on the left side of Hashem's throne. Why are they called? Angels are so holy. Right? Angels are so holy. Why are they called animals? Why are they called beasts? He says, why? Efisha Einam Bali Bechira, because they don't have free choice. V'yirasam v'yavasam, and their fear of God and love of Hashem is tivius lehem, only natural by them. And this, really, we should spend a few minutes. Chassidus discusses at great length the uniqueness of a person over animals. I mean, over animals also. Over angels. An angel has no free choice. They have no evil inclination. They are programmed to do what they do. If an angel is programmed to do what they do, their good is not real good. That's instinctive. It's their nature to do good, so they do good because that's who they are. They have no free choice. So therefore, the uniqueness of good and bad is when you have a choice to do good and bad, and you choose good over bad. Why are neshamis, and he's going to explain this, there are souls of people, and there are malachim, angels. Angels are called animals, and the neshamis are called people. Why? Because neshamis, when they come into a body, when we're born and throughout our lifetime, we have free choice to do good or not to do good. And therefore, when we do good, it's worthwhile because we have the choice to do bad. When an angel does good, I'm not going to say it's worthless, but it's nowhere near as precious as a person doing good because they can only do good. And like we said before, why did Hashem create evil in the world? What does Hashem want evil for? Because in order for good to be good, you need the opportunity to do evil. Because if you don't have the opportunity to do evil, then good is not good, because that's what you are. You're programmed to do good, so you do good. The uniqueness of a neshama, especially in a body, over angels, is that we have a free choice. And therefore, like the Zayar, and I am the part of Zayar, writes in Parshas Pinchas about the malachim are called animals, chayis hakodesh. Why? Because they have no free choice. Lachain milas atzadikim. Therefore, the level of a tzaddik, gdela mehem, is much greater than the level of angels. Why? Ki mader neshamis atzadikim. Because the dwelling place of tzaddikim is in the world of Bria, and the mother and the malachim is in the world of Yetzira. Okay, let's elaborate on this a little bit. This is basic stuff. Neshamas originate in the world of Atzilus. Okay? Now it means like this. There's four worlds, we learned already, right? Atzilus, Bria, Yetzira, Nasiya. Atzilus is a world which is one with God. Atzilus is a world which is one with Hashem. That's why it's called Atzilus, from the word Eitzel, which means near and close. Atzilus is a world of godliness. Bria means creation. Yesh mi'ayin, something from nothing. What does something from nothing mean? That it doesn't feel where it comes from. As far as it's concerned, it's nothing. It doesn't have a source. What does that mean? That is a world that starts feeling itself to be something. It's not completely bottled and nullified and subjugated to God like the world of Atzilus is. The creations in the world of Atzilus means, it literally means emanation. It's a world which is completely subjugated and only feels Hashem. The world of Bria, Yesh Mi'ayin, it already becomes an entity. It's not total bittul. Yetzira is even lower, it becomes a formation. The Bria becomes more now in a form, in a shape, that's even a lower world. And Asiya is even lower. Now, Rebbe, in the second parak of Tanya, and diverting from here a little bit, because he doesn't go into that here, all neshamas are a part of Hashem. Right? Neshama is chelek, alaka, mimal, and neshama is a part of God. What does it mean, a part of God? So the Rebbe in the second parak of Tanya explains that neshamas originate in the world of Atzilus. It's an emanation of God from the world of Atzilus, because that's the highest of the worlds. Okay? Really, neshamas come even higher than that. But in Tanya, he doesn't speak higher than that. He says, neshamas come from the world of Atzilus. After neshamas are emanated from the world of Atzilus, where do they live, so to speak? They go into Gan Eden, right? Neshamas are in Gan Eden. You always hear about the souls in Gan Eden. Gan Eden is the world of Bria. Angels primarily reside, again, this is spiritual residing, not physical homes. Angels are in the world of Yetzirah. Okay? So neshamas start, this Dalter Rebbe doesn't say here, but they said it before. Neshamas originate in the world of Atzilus, and then they move into Bria to live, which is Gan Eden. Malachim, regular Malachim, not exceptional Malachim, live in the world of Yetzirah. Which one's higher? Bria is higher than Yetzirah. So therefore, neshamas are higher than angels, because they are in a higher world. They're in the world of Bria, rather than the world, the next world down, is Yetzirah, which is the home of angels. Now, I'm going to say this outside, and then we'll see it inside. The four worlds correspond with the four letters of God's name. Okay, this is, we're going now into Chassidus 101. The four letters of God's name correspond with the four worlds. By the way, in Kabbalah and Chassidus, most of the things of four correspond with the four letters of God's name, which correspond with the four worlds. The four cups of wine on Pesach, the four questions, the four sons, they all correspond, according to Kabbalah, with the four letters of Hashem's name and the four worlds. Because the four worlds correspond with the four letters of God's name. So if you have Yud, Hey, Vav, and Hey, and you have Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah, and Asiya, right? Yud, the expression goes, shines in the world of Atzilus. Hey, shines in the world of Bria. Vav, shines in the world of Yetzirah. And the last Hey, shines in the world of Asiya. What does that mean? The four letters of God's name, Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, represent all 10 attributes of God. There's three intellectual attributes, Chochmah, Bina, and Das Chabad, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge, which is completely incorrect in English, in Chassidus, wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And then you have the six emotional attributes, and then you have Malchus. Okay? And if it sounds confusing, it's not. I mean, it is, but it's not. Yud is a level of Chochmah. What is Chochmah? So to go through this, because it's really basic Chassidus 101. And as many times as you hear it, you still don't understand it. So the more times we talk about it, the more we understand it. You know when you walk in the street and you get a brainstorm? You get a flash of a streak of a brainstorm, okay? That is called Chochmah. There's nothing to it yet. It's like a spark of a brainstorm. When you take that flash and you broaden it with width and length and depth, that's what's called Bina. Bina means understanding. Understanding already, you understand it in your brain. Chochmah is above, it's part of intellect, but it's above understanding. It's the initial flash of an idea that you don't even know what it is yet. When you take the flash and you start elaborating on it, then you come to the level of Bina. Okay? In Hebrew, Yud is a dot. Yud is a dot. That represents that initial flash. It's like a dot. There's nothing to it. When you understand it, and you broaden that Yud, then it becomes a Hey. The letter Hey of Hashem's name has a length and a width. Like the letter Hey. It's a whole full letter. Yud is the initial spark. Hey is the understanding. In the initial spark, that's total bittul, really. There's nothing there yet. There's nothing tangible that you can think, oh, I got it. It's just a flash. And that's why the word chochmah is two words. Koach ma means a power of nothingness. Chochmah represents humility, and that's why it's a dot. There's no length, there's no width, there's no substance to it. It's a dot. Okay? So Yud is Chochmah, and Hey is Bina. That's why, in Hebrew, masculine is Yud, and feminine is Hey. At the end of the word, if it's a Yud, it's masculine. If it's a Hey, it's feminine. Why? Because men and women are Chochmah and Bina. In procreation, the man gives the seed, which is a drop. It's like the letter Yud. The woman takes the seed and elaborates on it for 9 months. Okay? That's the level of Bina, of understanding. That's why women, girls, become bas mitzvah at 12, and boys become bar mitzvah at 13, because bina is more by a woman than it is by a man. Why? Because a woman, by nature, is the level of bina, of understanding. Because what is the concept of a woman in Hebrew, the letter hey? Or in practical concept, they're the ones that elaborate. They take this, the seed, the drop, and they elaborate on it in a weight and a length, and you produce a child. So, masculine father is Chochmah, the mother is Bina, okay? Then, what happens when there's a unity between father and mother? You create children. What do you create? Son and daughter. But you create boy and girl. That's the mitzvah of Purim Avos, to have a son and a daughter. So what do? If you look at the letters, so Yud is the masculine father, He is the mother. Now, when you have the letter Yud, and you extend it down, then you have a Vav. Right? So when the father and the mother give birth to a son, you're taking the Yud of the father, the masculine, and you're lowering it down, which is the letter Vav. Which, by the way, is also numerically six, because there's six midos. The second hey of Hashem's name, the last letter of Hashem's name, is a level of Malchus, which is also the feminine daughter. Okay? So you have, in the 10 attributes of God, the 10 spheres, as they're called, the 10 emanations of godliness, you have two masculines and two feminines. Chochmah and Bina is father and mother, masculine and feminine. Okay, nothingness, extension, expanding, and then you have it coming down into a son and into the daughter. Okay? So the four letters of God's name represent the 10 attributes. Chochmah, though, represents total nullification. That's what Chochmah represents. So it says in Zayar that the letter Yud shines in Atzilus. That means the dominant attribute of Hashem revealed in Atzilus is Chochmah, because Chochmah means bittul, nullification, and that's what the world of Atzilus is, a world which is totally nullified to Hashem. The Hay is the world of Bria, right? The world of Bria, the world of understanding, Bina. Bina shines into the world of Bria. So what does Bria represent? Not the level of Chochmah nullification, but it represents the world of understanding. Vav, the next level, the sun, represents emotional attributes. Not intellectual, natural, instinctive emotions. Okay? So now the Alter Rebbe is saying over here that neshamas are greater than angels. Because how do animals work? An emotional instinct. So what world is emotional instinct? That's the world of Yetzirah. Neshamas, which have this intellect and understanding what godliness is all about, because they have the choice of good and bad, and they have the uniqueness of intellect, that level is in the world of Bria. So Bria is a higher level than the world of Yetzirah, because neshamas are higher than angels. And in fact, there's a very interesting medrash, which we learned in the past. The medrash says that when Hashem created the world, the last thing He created was Adam and Chava. So when Hashem created Adam, the medrash says that the angels came to God, the malachim came to Hashem, and said, "Who's this new kid on the block? Who's this Adam that you made?" So Hashem said to the angels, "He's smarter than you. He's smarter than you, and I'll prove it." It says, the Medrash, that Hashem took all the animals in the world and brought them in front of the angels, and he said, give them names. You name them, and they couldn't do it. He brought the animals in front of Adam, the Medrash says, and Adam said, okay, Lazat, there's an expression, for this one, it's good to call a horse, sus. For this one, it's good to call chamor. For this one, it's good to call shor. Adam and Ishan started naming all the animals. Okay? So Hashem said to the angels, you see, he's smarter than you. So the angels gave in, and they gave in their defeat. Okay? So Chassidus asks, every yukul names pets. Yeah, every day you have a dog, you name. Everybody gives names for everybody. What's the big deal? What is the brilliance of Adam Rishon that he was able to call names to all the animals? Every yukul gives names to everybody who has a dog has a name, and cats have a name, and birds have a name. Everybody has names. What's the big deal? Why? And why couldn't the angels do it? So Chassidus explains, because giving a name of an animal demanded a tremendous amount of wisdom. Because the Hebrew letters of a name are the lifeline of the name. Like when parents name a baby, it's a prophecy given to the parents from God himself of what the name of the baby is. Why? Because the letters, like a horse, is called Sus, Samach, Vav, Samach. That's the lifeline from God to the animal called a horse. And Adam Rishon, because of his neshama, was so brilliant, Adam Rishon was able to look at a horse and see the lifeline of the neshama connected to the letters Samach, Vav, Samach. Chamor was Ches, Mem, Vav, Resh, and any other name. The angels, it wasn't a question, Tom, Dick, Harry, Joe, Shmo, I mean, everybody could do that. But Malachim are Midas, not Seichel. Malachim are completely instinctive. So even when they do good, it's not an intellectual, rational choice of good versus evil or evil versus good. It's completely instinctive. And Alter Rebbe said in the previous chapter, now he's saying it more so, that is called animals. Serving Hashem instinctively is not uniquely human way of serving Hashem. You're serving Hashem like an animal who serves its master instinctively. What's the uniqueness of a neshama? A neshama has the ability to choose right over wrong, good over bad. That comes from a deeper level of intelligence, to be able to choose right from wrong. Animals have no free choice. Angels have no free choice. The only creatures in the world that have free choice are people. What?
Kind of, I guess, connected. What happens if in a situation, which we know does happen, where a baby is not given a Hebrew name, does that child still have some kind of Hebrew name in
Shemayim? Sure. I don't know if you watched Living Torah the other week, this past week. Okay, but anyway, I mentioned this in the past. It's very interesting. When parents who had a baby asked the Rebbe what they should name their kid, the Rebbe never answered. He said, it's your prophecy, it's your thing. When adults came to the Rebbe, whether it was by dollars or in last week's Living Torah, you saw a bunch of cases like that. When adults came to the Rebbe and asked the Rebbe what name, so the Rebbe told him the name. The Rebbe I would ask him, what's your, sometimes the Rebbe said regular name, English name, whatever it was. Last week, the Rebbe said there was a lady who came to the Rebbe. She said, Rebbe, I don't have a Hebrew name. So the Rebbe says, what's your... So she said, Suzanne. So the Rebbe thought for a second. The other names that came out right away, this the Rebbe thought for a second, and he said, okay, it begins with an S, pick the name Sarah. The question is, babies he didn't, and now he could? The bottom line is, the Rebbe could see what the Neshama lifeline is to the body, and that's what the Jewish name is all about. But, by a baby, it's a prophecy given only to the parents, and nobody else has a right to mix in. But once that stage passed, and they're adults, so then the Rebbe would give you a name. There's a Mashpi in Kfar Chabad. Okay, a very special person. He was a ger many years ago. He converted to Yiddishkeit. And when he converted, he took a name. I don't know what the name was that he took. When he was in Australia, he converted. And he took a Hebrew name. And he once went into the Yichidus, and the Rebbe changed his name to Shneur Zalman. It's very interesting. It's a rare thing that the Rebbe changed his name. Didn't add, didn't take off. The Rebbe changed his name from what he did, and the Rebbe gave him the name Shneur Zalman. But that's the unique one. Bringing out the uniqueness of other Marishan was that he was able to see, but that came from a level of intellect of being able to choose right from wrong, which comes from intellect, seichel. Animals, because they're only midas, they're only emotional, they don't do things with free choice, because free choice can only come from intellect. Babies don't have free choice. They don't have seichel to know what's right or wrong. Right? When a little baby, I'm not talking about 10-year-old babies, a little baby knocks over a cup, you're going to punch them for knocking over the cup. I mean, they didn't know. What do they know? They didn't. It wasn't something that they had the choice to do it and not to do it, and they're blamed for not doing it. There's no maturity, there's no seichel, so therefore they have no free choice. But the fact that a Jew has free choice makes them infinitely greater than the angels who don't have the free choice. Because when you don't have free choice and you do good, it's basically worthless. I'm not going to say worthless, but compared to the person who has the ability to choose bad from right from wrong, that is worthless compared to their ability to choose good. And then good is good. And that's why Hashem gave us so much bad in the world that we should be able to choose right from wrong. And by the way, that doesn't exist even to Neshamas in Gan Eden. That only exists down here. Therefore, what's done in this world is done. Once you go upstairs and there's no free choice anymore because you don't have an evil inclination, you don't have a body, it's gone. It's over. To be continued.